from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny. Motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 79 of the Forge of Freedom. Today for Monday Gun Day, I've got Paul Lathrop in the studio. As you're probably used to having seen my dad, Mike Uli, in the studio, but got a little change of pace this week. Going to get Paul Lathrop in the guest seat. I think he's used to being on the host side of things, but we're going to sort of switch roles here a little bit. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Alex. It's the least I could. You've been on the air for me hundreds of times. I could take some time out to be on your show at least once.
Well, a few weeks ago, I was trying to think how many times I'd been on the air with you, and I know through April of this year, I think it was around 80 times. So it's getting close to the 100 mark if it's not over the 100 mark by now. So I really appreciate you joining the show, and of course, I always enjoy joining your show as a guest as well. Speaking of which, Paul is the man behind the Polite Society podcast, and we're going to get into that here in just a little bit. He's also the founder, along with his wife, Susan, of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Paul, you and I met, and we were talking about this just a little bit before we hit the record button. You and I met in 2019 at the NRA annual meeting. I actually learned about you in 2016 after you'd been a guest on Gun Talk with Tom Gresham. But you'd had a podcast for a while before that, right? You started around 2012. Is that right?
February of 2012 was the first episode of what would become the Polite Society podcast. Back then, it was I had this really creative name of the Politics and Guns podcast.
And you started as Politics and Guns. What was your motivation to start the podcast back in 2012? Was there anything in particular that motivated you to start the podcast?
Oh, most definitely. I was absolutely sick and tired of Barack Obama, and I'd been listening to podcasts for a while, some of which I started listening to, and they've started to get really big. And I thought, you know, I've always been told I have a really good voice. I've been told I speak reasonably well. All I have to do is start this podcast, put out well thought out, reasoned opinions. People will jump on board, and together we'll all get Barack Obama out of office. He will not get a second term. And obviously I failed miserably.
Well, that was February 2012. We'll just chalk it up to maybe you didn't have quite enough time to keep that from happening. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you started Politics and Guns in early 2012. When did it morph into the Polite Society podcast?
It took, I'm going to say it took 2 years, it all came about at SHOT Show. When I started podcasting, I started growing an audience, but it's always seemed like I hit a cap. And whenever I asked somebody if they would be interviewed on the podcast, they'd go, Politics and Guns. What about politics is it? And which side are you on? And the politics seemed to be turning everybody else off when I asked them to be on Politics and Guns. So I wanted to change the name just because of that. And then a good friend who was in podcasting but no longer is, Chaz Murray, who is the unnamed trucker of the Road Gunner podcast, suggested that, well, Armed Society, I mean, an Armed Society is a Polite Society, that'd be a pretty good name. And I thought it was a fantastic idea. So when SHOT Show 2018, 2019 was rolling around, when that one, I decided then that we're going to go to the Polite Society podcast, something a little more obvious, the direction of the show, that it would make things easier. And it did. And it's, the name is just, I've never even thought since then of changing the name.
Yeah. Well, we talk about just that concept, the idea that a polite society or an armed society is a polite society frequently, right? I mean, that's one of the core concepts of an armed citizenry, is that if people know that others are armed, you're more likely to be polite to them and to be civil. Whereas in a society where everyone is disarmed except the criminals, of course, there's more chaos. And I think that that name captures that idea nicely. And I don't remember, do you know off the top of your head who came up with that phrase, armed society is a polite society?
Robert Heinlein, the sci-fi author. Okay. And was the person that came up with that.
Okay. Any idea how many episodes you've released up till now?
We are of the Polite Society podcast, the Monday evening show. We are in the 670s right now. Now, I've done, for the last 3 years, I've been doing a separate news show that happens throughout the week. If I add that in, I'm going to say I'm probably over 1,000 episodes between the two shows. But of Polite Society, we are 670 plus. I've done 7 Polite Society news shows, which, by the way, you were the first guest on.
Oh, very, very cool. I'd actually forgotten that I was one of the first guests, if not the first guest. So I knew I was early, but didn't know I was the first. So that's cool.
You were episode 1 of Polite Society News.
That's awesome. Well, I know you don't, you're not a podcaster full time, and neither am I. This is episode 79, and I know how much work has gone into 79 episodes, and you've got over 10 times the number of episodes that I've got. So I know it's been quite an undertaking. What motivates you to keep going? I know it can't be to get Barack Obama out of office anymore. So what motivates you to keep going with the podcast?
The real motivation to keep going is the people I connect with, not just the people on the air, although that is a huge part of it. I love talking to other Second Amendment advocates. But starting about three and a half, four years ago, I went from recording a traditional podcast where it was just over audio. We all met over, at the time it was Skype, and we used Zoom for a while. But I moved from that to doing an absolute live broadcast. And the instant feedback I get is just phenomenal. And I love talking to people. I love getting that feedback. And I'm not going to lie to you, a lot of my live viewers and listeners are much smarter than I am. And I like to think that the shows I do are their shows as well. They can get their opinions out as long as they can type fairly quickly.
Well, I know when you started Polite Society News, that was a recorded show, and you went to live broadcast not too long after you started Polite Society News. And I remember I was a little bit uneasy about the live broadcast with comments or listeners commenting live on the air on YouTube and Facebook. And I think you broadcast on, is it Rumble? And
yep.
Do you broadcast anywhere else? Or are those the three main?
No, it goes, I push to Facebook, YouTube, and Rumble, and also to a place called OpsLens. OpsLens is something you can get. And if you've got a smart TV, you can get the OpsLens app for your TV. I go there, and then from there, it goes out to a lot of the places I just mentioned, plus Getter, plus I believe they broadcast live on a few other video channels that I honestly had never heard of until they sent me a report saying this is how many views your show is getting through us on these outlets, and I was stunned.
Yeah, and you get comments, at least I know from YouTube and Facebook. Do you get comments from live comments from other sources there as well?
Not very often. And the only one I can get that is not Facebook or YouTube, and that is if somebody comments on Rumble, I get an email that the comment has come in, but then I have to jump over and see what the comment is. And I can't often put them on the air live because that's the time delay is too time consuming. By the time I find out what the comment is, we've probably moved off to another topic.
So if somebody wants to comment live, they need to catch the show on YouTube or Facebook, really.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not the only guest that comes on Polite Society News. You have a lot of other really great guests that come on the show as well. I know you talk to Tom Walls from Firearms Academy of Seattle on a regular basis, and Mike Piebleworski and Brooke Cheney and some other great guests as well. And you cover a really broad range of topics. Where do you see the show going in the future? Are you hoping to make any changes, or do you see any evolutions with the show coming up anytime soon?
I don't really see anything changing from where it's and primarily Polite Society focuses around gun rights. I will, as my mind wanders and I pick up ideas here and there, they will come out on the air at one point or another. But primarily, it's centered around our Second Amendment rights. And I don't see it going a whole lot of anywhere else. I could maybe expand out a little. I'm a small L libertarian in my political beliefs. I believe I should have the right to do absolutely anything I choose as long as I don't hurt another human being. Everything else should be my decision on what to do. And that's... that feeds my political views, and I just don't see that changing enough that I would bring anything else in. I don't want to alienate. We've got a rather large audio download audience. We have a fair live video audience, but we've got a really large audio download audience. I don't want to alienate them and cause them to go away by me talking about trucking, which I'm very knowledgeable about. I did it for 20 years. By talking about, competitive archery or anything like that. I'm going to stick to Second Amendment rights.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair to say that you have a devoted following, and that's, I think, largely because obviously you're very knowledgeable. You do speak well, and you have a great voice for the show and for your listeners, but you've also been consistent for many years in building that following. So I think that's been a key to your success. But one thing I'd like you to mention, I talked about, you don't do this full time. You have another job. You haven't always been into podcasting. Tell us a little bit about Paul Lathrop before podcasting. What you mentioned truck driving, is that what you did primarily before you got into podcasting?
I did. I started driving truck. I drove for, as I mentioned, almost 20 years. I started driving truck in 2002 and got into listening to podcast. Let me back up a little bit. Driving truck, one of the issues you've got is you can listen to a radio station for about 30 miles, maybe 50. If it's overnight and they've got out flamethrower of a signal on the AM band, there's a few stations you can pick up for several hundred miles. But generally, you listen to a show a half hour at a time. You don't get a full show out of your drive anywhere if you're listening to radio. So I found satellite radio, where you can listen to doesn't matter where you are. If you're in North America, you can listen to satellite radio. Through that, I found Tom Gresham. I used to love listening to Gun Talk on Sundays. Well, he mentioned that he had something called a podcast, and that it was just the show packaged up, and you could listen to it anytime you want, anywhere you want. That's how I discovered podcasts. The very first podcast I ever listened to was Tom Gresham's Gun Talk. And he introduced, every once in a while, he would have a podcaster on and he would introduce, and they'd talk to them. I'd go and find that podcast. Generally, I found I liked it. And that introduced me to several others. And what I found was these people did not have a radio voice. They did not have good presentation. And they generally just, and they had the right idea. They just didn't express it very well. And I thought, you know, I can do better than this. And so I talked to my wife. We've always had this. If we're going to be spending money over a certain amount, that we would talk to each other about it. I told her, look, I want to buy a laptop computer to use on the road for connection. And I want to buy a microphone and this and that. It's going to be a couple hundred bucks. And she said, okay. And then we started getting the bill for the cellular internet. And that was an issue. But by then I'd built up a little bit of an audience. I was able to convince her that, yeah, this is a good thing to continue on with. And God bless her. There's been times since 2012, we're now in 23, going on 12 years. There's been times I've been ready to throw in the towel. And she's the one that's pushed me to keep going, keep doing this. You've got something. Do not give it up. So she's my biggest cheerleader.
Yeah. Yeah, Susan, I've met Susan a few times, and for those who haven't met her, you're missing out. She's a wonderful person and obviously a huge cheerleader of yours, because I think she realizes that what you're doing and the message that you're promoting and spreading is an important one. So I think you'd probably agree with that, wouldn't you, Paul? That
oh, she's, yeah.
Obviously, you say she's your biggest cheerleader, but she understands the importance of what you're doing, and I think the amount of satisfaction I think that you probably get from it.
Yeah, and I feel almost like I've drug her along with me, because she's become an activist in her own right. She is. I don't know if you discussed them on the air yet, but the DC Project, now Women for Gun Rights, she's the South Dakota state coordinator for that group. And she's doing things here in South Dakota that I don't have time to do. I don't have the inclination to do, but she's went ahead and took it on her shoulders. And she's every bit as much of a Second Amendment advocate as I am.
Yeah. That's an amazing thing, really, for any couple to be able to find something that you can enjoy and work on it and do together. But I think that you and Susan certainly share that. I know we were talking about riding motorcycles, and I think you were mentioning that she's started to develop a little bit of a passion for that. She was riding to work, I think you told me, in 25 degree weather.
Yes.
motorcycles and guns. Right. What two better things could you bond over?
Exactly. And, you know, there are a lot of similarities between the two. Neither one of them are cheap. To get into guns is not inexpensive. And motorcycling, they may say it's inexpensive, and it may not be that expensive to buy your first beginner bike. But once you get into it, yeah, you're going to be spending serious money on bikes. And they give you deep, deep satisfaction. And if you get into them right, they give you relaxation.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Well, Paul, you mentioned one of the things that you love about Polite Society News and in the podcast is the people that you get to meet, the networking. And you mentioned Tom Gresham. I know you've been on his show at least once. We talked a little bit about some of the other folks that you have on it as guests. Is there anybody else outside of Susan that you would say has been a big supporter of yours or a mentor? Did you sort of lean on? Is there anybody else that you've leaned on a lot to sort of, I don't know, for advice or to get through some tough times with the show? Anything like that? Is there anybody else that you'd like to point out?
Well, in the very beginning, and the one who really got me convinced to do it was Chaz Murray. He did a fantastic show called the Road Gunner podcast. He was another truck driver and was and had a podcast. He was the one that really got the ball rolling. And early on, I joined a network called the Self Defense Radio Network. And that's my network. It was the Gun Rights Radio Network was the one Mark Vandenberg did. Mark helped get me onto his network and provided podcasting advice to keep me going through tough times, to get me through challenges. There really are two people, and they're currently helping me. They're currently part of the Polite Society podcast team that you hear on Monday nights, or if you catch the Polite Society proper podcast, they're two of the people you hear. And that's Rob Morse, who's been now with me for 10 of the 12 years, and Amanda Suffolk, who's been with me, I believe, the last 4 or 5 years. Both of those people I consider much smarter than I am. Both of them are fantastic people and are a great part of the success of the show. I lay at the feet of those two.
Yeah. Well, I can certainly vouch for Rob and Amanda both being fantastic individuals, incredibly smart. Rob, of course, he runs the blog Self Defense Gun Stories. Am I getting that right?
That's his podcast, yeah, and the Slow Facts blog, yes.
His Slow Facts blog, sorry, I mixed that up. But the Slow Facts blog, he writes frequently at his blog and, of course, does quite a few podcasts. And Amanda has Eye on the Target Radio, and you're behind that too, aren't you? What do you do for Eye on the Target Radio?
I am. I do video production for her on Sundays, at least most Sundays. I take about one Sunday a month off. All I do is use my broadcast software that I have. I built a set for her with her own graphics, with her own complete style in there. And I take the audio from her radio show, and she sends me a picture, and I'll put her picture up. And sometimes we can merge in live video of her guest if she's got a guest, or I'll just put a picture of them up. But you can tune in and watch her do her radio show every Sunday.
And that's a nationally syndicated radio show as well, right? So it broadcasts on radio stations around the country, as well as broadcast online by video. And that's broadcast on the Polite Society Facebook page, right? And on the Polite Society YouTube.
Yes. And also on my Rumble page as well. But the big push for that is to go to OpsLens so people can just watch it on their TV. That's the big push there is for them to be able to tune in on Sunday afternoon and watch the video.
Okay, very cool. Well, on the same subject of the podcast being a source of sort of networking and meeting great people, you and I met, like I mentioned, at the 2019 NRA annual meeting, and it was actually at the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network booth. Speaking of great people, Marty and Gila Hayes, obviously behind the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. There's another story. Actually, the first time I heard about you, we met in 2019, but the first time I heard about you was in 2016 on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk. Would you mind to tell us a little bit about the story that led to your appearance on Gun Talk and the incident that occurred in Nebraska? I think you were a truck driver and you had a student driver along with you, right? And there was a little bit of a dust up of sorts at a truck stop. Would you mind to tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Absolutely. I had a student, you were right, we were driving from the Chicago area and we were on our way to Northern California. Well, the way you do that is you shoot across 80. We needed fuel. We pulled into a truck stop just west of Omaha, a Flying J truck stop. We go to get fuel. Long story short, because I don't want to get into the whole, we could talk about this for an hour and a half, just this incident and how it unfolded for an hour and a half. and I might not get through the whole story. But long story short, we were blocked in by another truck that was leaving that had gotten fuel. And my student goes, what do I do now? I said, well, try to jigger around this way, try to move around and adjust out that way. We couldn't do it. We were flat stuck. I told my student, look, beep on the horn. And so he lets a blast go on the air horn. And this guy comes out of the truck and he's walking straight and quickly for my truck. I'm in the bunk. I had been sleeping before my student stopped to get fuel. And the guy reaches up, grabs the mirror, and starts climbing the stairs on the driver's side of the truck. My student's window is open. One of my rules for my students was, if somebody yells stop, you can't hear it with your window open. So if you're backing, if you're negotiating in tight areas, you have to have your window down. I just knew this guy was going to come through the window and start pummeling on my student, who, by the way, is a guy, fantastic guy. I'm still friends with him. 5'6", if I'm generous, and not physically built, but the guy is coming up the truck, and I yell at the guy, dude, I've got a gun, in my best command voice I can muster. The guy gets huge round platters of eyes, does a complete spin, and starts marching back to his truck. And I consider, look, incident over. I never had to draw my gun. I never had to do anything. The guy got in his truck and drove away. We were in the truck. We put our truck in gear, left. And about 30 minutes later, we're pulled over by the Nebraska State Patrol. And I ended up spending, long story short, again, I ended up spending 5 nights in jail, and for the next 6 months fighting charges of terroristic threats and the use of a firearm in commission of a felony, which is the terroristic threat. And I could have spent 55 years in a Nebraska prison, because this guy claimed I got out of the truck, was waving a chrome revolver around in his face as I'm standing in front of the truck, asking if he wanted to die tonight. He made the whole story up. The firearm they confiscated from me when they did pull the truck over, I did have my absolutely rock stock Glock model 22 40 caliber in flat black. That was the firearm they confiscated. The charges were eventually dropped through Marty Hayes, through thank God for the podcast. We had a lot of people donate money for my legal defense. I was able to afford a rock star attorney in Omaha, and the charges got dropped when the state of Nebraska, the guy who drove the other truck, just flat disappeared. They couldn't find him to come testify again. And so eventually everything went away.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of lessons to learn in that story, right? One of which is what we often refer to as the race to the telephone, right? And that the first person to call 911 is perceived by the system to be the victim. And it's hard to reverse that sort of presumption within the system. And this dude called and apparently portrayed himself as a victim and you as the bad dude. And that was the way that you were treated for months. And I know at the time I think you mentioned that you were not a member of ACLDN. Nevertheless, Marty worked to try to get you support, of course, not from the membership fund at the ACLDN, but through other folks in the firearms industry to help you raise money. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair to say. I owe a debt of gratitude, and I will for the rest of my life, to Kathy Jackson, who, if you are at all familiar with the training world, Kathy Jackson wrote the book, The Cornered Cat, A Woman's Guide to Concealed Carry. By the way, guys, get that book for your wife, but before you give it to her, read it, because it's got a lot of good stuff for us in there.
But we don't want to give our wives a head start, to especially if they're already smarter than us, right?
Oh, and open secret, many of them are. But
yeah,
Kathy was the very first firearms professional training I took. I convinced her to come up to Sioux Falls. We sold a class of a dozen and a half people, like 18 people took her cornered cat class. I was able to take it for free because I organized it and sold the seats. She was operating through the Firearms Academy of Seattle. That's where she got her instructor credentials. And she made the connection to Marty Hayes. And between her and Marty, they put word out that I needed help. And that was a huge, huge part of why I got so much help. Marty kicked in money out of his own pocket for my legal defense. I never got a penny, nor should I have ever gotten a penny from ACLDN's defense fund, because I was not a member. I am a member now. I have been since charges were dropped 6 months after that. So I will be for the rest of my life as well. I honestly believe ACLDN is, if you are interested in legal protection in the aftermath of a self-defense incident, or a misinterpretation of a self-defense incident, you need to be a member of ACLDN. It could have saved me tens of thousands of dollars, and I'm not exaggerating. To get to trial was $10,000, and then it was, I want to say $2,500 a day just in the attorney fees every day of trial.
Yeah, which could easily have been a 4 or 5 day trial.
Yeah, and thank goodness it never got there.
Yeah. Yeah, so for those who don't know, like you said, Paul, the ACLDN is a post-defense member support network. So if their members are involved in a self-defense incident, even if a firearm is not discharged, like this particular circumstance, they have a fund to help for things like bail, your attorney, expert witnesses, et cetera. And I have no doubt, I don't know what your bail was, but you said you were in for 5 nights, which was 5 nights too many. Mm-hmm. But of course, you had to post a bail of some sort, I'm sure. On top of that, had to pay an attorney. So those fees add up quickly.
Yes. Then the interesting thing about Nebraska is I was arrested on a Friday evening. They have arraignment court. They have arraignment court on Wednesday, and that's it. If you're arrested Thursday morning, you're going to spend a week in jail before you see a judge. How that's a fair and speedy trial, I have no idea. But you're going to spend a week in jail before you ever see a judge, before bail is ever discussed. And yeah, if I wouldn't have had contributions, the bail itself was $5,000, $5,500, which was 10% of $55,000.
Yeah.
And yeah,
depending on the jurisdiction, could be much higher. It sounds like you were facing a significant charge if you were facing 55 years. I know where I practice primarily, if you're facing 55 years, it wouldn't be uncommon to have a bail of $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 or more. So cash bail of that high.
Yeah.
So you could easily be facing an insurmountable bail. So number one, and I don't want to rehash this too much, people should go and listen to, I think you were on, I'll link to it if I can find it, the episode you were on, Gun Talk with Tom Gresham. But the race to the telephone, incredibly important. If a firearm is involved, even if you haven't fired the gun, you should call 911, because you may be involved with a situation like a guy like this who knows how the system works and tries to game the system. Because let's face it, a lot of people who have been involved in the criminal justice system know exactly how it works. Those of us who have not don't necessarily understand the dynamics there. So the race to the telephone is incredibly important. Become a member of one of these post-defense support networks. ACLDN, I think, is as good as any. There are other good ones out there as well. But you and I both know that Marty Hayes and Gila Hayes over there are wonderful people. The other thing is that you were probably, I suspect, offered some kind of plea. Were you ever offered a plea?
Initially, yes. They wanted me to plead to the 5-year terroristic threats, and they would drop the 50-year commission of fire felony with a firearm. And I balked immediately. In my mind, I'd done nothing wrong. There was nothing to plead to. I just was really hoping my attorney could take care of it before it got to trial.
Yeah.
And thank goodness.
But you are sitting in jail. You couldn't post bail. That 5 years versus 55 starts to look good at some point, especially if you're represented by a public defender, potentially, mm-hmm. et cetera. So you could see why somebody might take a plea when in fact they're not guilty. So that's why it's important to have the support that you need so that you can defend yourself appropriately. You agree with that, Paul?
Oh yeah. If you own a firearm, you need to be a member of a organization like ACLDN. I personally believe ACLDN is the best out there, period. Not only for the cost, but for what you get. There's nobody that does it better than ACLDN, period. There's also very few that do it as inexpensively as ACLDN does.
They have a... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I do have a relationship with ACLDN. I do occasionally receive a check from ACLDN for them sponsoring me, for them using my story. But I would say that whether or not I got money from them, I would never go to anybody else. I would not let anybody else use my story because nobody does it as good as ACLDN does.
Well, I agree with that. I don't get any monetary compensation from them, but I should disclose that I am an affiliate attorney with the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. So if somebody were in an incident near my region, I would be on a list of attorneys they could call, but I don't get paid in any way by the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, but nevertheless would say that they are an excellent, excellent organization. They also have one of the things that's nice is that they have a family membership as well. So if you have a spouse or others in the household, that family membership can help you save some money as well. But the other thing too, I mean, this drives me crazy, and maybe it doesn't drive you as crazy as it does me, Paul, because I see this every day as a criminal defense attorney. You were facing 55 years and they offered you 5. That mm-hmm. tells you how guilty they really thought you were, is right? I mean, if they thought you were guilty of the full crime, there's no way they would offer you 5 years, right? I mean, this was just prosecutors playing games to try to get some kind of conviction because there was a gun involved.
That's exactly it. I could not testify to this in court. This is all hearsay, so to speak. I heard stories when I was going through my incident from a couple different sources. One, my attorney, I absolutely trust. There was a former sheriff. This was in Sarpy County, Nebraska. There was a former sheriff that was brought up on charges in Sarpy County because he let a soon-to-be single mother borrow a firearm while going through a divorce because the soon-to-be ex was a a little bit of a loose cannon, and nobody was certain whether he would go after this soon-to-be young mother or not, because he didn't go through the registration scheme Nebraska had at the time. The guy was brought up on charges, a sheriff. I mean, come on.
Yeah. There's actually a sheriff in the county where I'm from facing 15 felony counts as we speak. He was just brought for an initial hearing last week. So I hate to see it, because sheriffs are really, if sheriffs embrace their role as constitutional peace officers, I should say, I think that they can be sort of the last bastion of protection, of constitutional protection for our individual liberties before us, of course. I mean, we are our own best protection, but in terms of law enforcement, I think sheriffs are next in line. And I hate to see it when sheriffs just flagrantly absolve themselves of their obligations and basically make a fool of their department and themselves. So I hate to see that sort of thing.
By and large, I trust sheriffs simply because they are answerable to the people. Most sheriffs come up for election every so often, whether it be every 2 years, every 4 years, whatever. And if they get too aggressive in their office or too passive in their office, they have to answer the people when the next election comes around, and all of a sudden they're unemployed.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. That's been my experience here in Indiana as well. They're generally the best. If you go up in terms of, so like the state police in Indiana are the worst in my experience. They're the most anxious to do to violate your rights, to snoop around on your property, to invade your rights, etc. And as you go down the line to more local, I think it gets better. So I would count the county sheriff as the most local and most accountable.
My experience in reporting on Second Amendment stories, the other way can be bad as well. City police chiefs are often very anti-gun, and they are appointed by mayors who, there's a lot of mayors. I would say probably a plurality of the mayors out there are Democratic party. And When you are appointed by somebody, you kind of have to go lockstep in what their ideal is. And if they say jump, you must ask how high. Yeah. I don't like police chiefs. I tend to go for elected officials like sheriffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. One thing I want to mention, one last thing I want to mention before we leave your story about the incident in Nebraska, is that you mentioned a couple of times your rock star attorney, and I want to point out how important I think that is to have an attorney that I think is generally familiar with self-defense and with firearms. But also, I think it's important. I'm curious to know hear what you think about this. I think it's important to get one that's familiar with the local sort of way of doing things in the criminal justice system, because county to county things operate differently. And I think it's important to have somebody who's familiar with the judge, familiar with the prosecutor, familiar with the law enforcement departments, et cetera, because they can gain a lot of insight that somebody from out of the area might not know. Is that your experience as well, Paul?
I would agree with that. And you want somebody that's specifically knowledgeable in self-defense law in your state. I still carry, I don't know if I can pull it out in a moment's notice, but I think I can. I still carry the card for my attorney, for my Nebraska attorney, in my wallet, because he is also, I don't know that I would ever hire him, but he's also licensed to practice in South Dakota. However, like you said, he's a Nebraska attorney. He's a guy that knows the laws inside out, frontwards and backwards in Nebraska. South Dakota, probably not so much. Where I started to go with this is you want to know somebody that knows self-defense law. And a lot of attorneys, a lot of criminal defense attorneys, I know you're a criminal defense attorney, Alex. I don't mean to put this in the wrong way. I hope you don't take it wrong.
Oh, no worries.
They deal with guilty people all the time. They deal with people that did the crime. They're interested in getting the case resolved, especially if you go public defender. They're all about getting the case involved. They're way too overloaded. They need to get rid of some of their cases. So they're going to be absolutely amenable to a plea deal even if you're not guilty. Try and get somebody who defends people who don't not always just the bad guys' lawyers. You don't want the lawyer for the local crime lord. You want an attorney that is knowledgeable in self-defense and defends the regular guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have numbers off the top of my head, but a very low percentage of my clients are completely innocent. And very few of my cases are self-defense cases, let alone a self-defense case with a firearm. So you need somebody who understands, and that's the case for most criminal defense attorneys. And they just don't understand. They're not gun people. By and large, the legal community is not very gun friendly. So your likelihood of finding a criminal defense attorney that is knowledgeable about firearms, knowledgeable about self-defense, and who would know how to represent somebody who's truly innocent is going to be a tough combination to find. And that's one of the great things about something like the ACLDN, right, is they help you connect with those sorts of attorneys. So incredibly, incredibly important.
Yeah, it is. And I want to dovetail off this and stay on Nebraska for just another minute, because one other thing that opened my eyes in this whole thing was spending 5 nights in jail. Jail is not a place where generally most of the people in jail, even pre-arraignment, where they're just, you're in a holding cell. And there's, in my case, there was probably 50 other people in that same room I was in. I'm going to say I was probably the only really innocent person in there. Everybody else I encountered, I could see why they were in jail, and I didn't have a problem with them being there. And you want to avoid, if at all possible, avoid spending even one night in an environment like that. 5 nights, that's enough to last me the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's one thing I'll say is that while most of my clients are guilty of something, they're usually not guilty of everything they've been charged with. But so that's where a lot of the work gets done, is figuring out what they are and are not guilty of. But they're nevertheless guilty of something. So they're still criminals usually. And you don't want to be in jail where 98% of the jail population is a criminal. It's just not a good place to be. That seems obvious, but one of the problems, and I don't know what your experience was like, Paul, is that jail staff, they're not a lot of times excited to be there either. And they're not terribly interested in taking care of your complaints or sorting out petty jail fights, et cetera. So if you're in, you've got to keep your nose clean and don't talk to people, because there are lots of jailhouse snitches as well.
Oh, yeah. I am one, and obviously, you know, Polite Society Podcast is the upshot of that. I love to talk. I love conversing with people. I love having conversations. It's a charge for me. And 5 days, sit down, shut up, and don't talk to anybody. That was a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, brutal. Well, Paul, one thing I'd like you to mention, we touched on it just briefly, is the Self-Defense Radio Network. What is the Self-Defense Radio Network, and tell us how that got started and where it stands today.
Where it got started, let me go back up way back to 2012 again. And when I very first got started, there was a gun rights radio network run by a man who again was a podcaster, no longer in it, but run by a guy named Mark Vanderberg. And at the time, very big network. It slowly faded and went away, I'm going to say 8 or 9 years ago now. And in its absence, when Gun Rights Radio Network went away, a few people tried to start networks. I kind of joined them, and then nothing ever happened with the network, period. Well, I got to talking with Bob Main, who does the Handgun World podcast, and he and I decided maybe we would make a go of starting a network. Bob decided very shortly after we started it that, yeah, it wasn't for him. But we'd gotten a core of really good podcasters together, and we decided we had named it the Self-Defense Radio Network. That's because a lot of what we do is about firearms and about self-defense. And it's continually grown since we very first started. Right now, I believe there are 14 shows on the network. We're looking to add more as we go forward, but that's where it got its start. Was that there wasn't a place where a lot of like-minded podcasts could go, and somebody could just go to one website, see them all, sample them, and what they liked they could keep, and what they didn't, fair enough.
I like the idea. I mean, even today, as podcast platforms have improved, a lot of times if you get your podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast, there are suggestions for related podcasts or podcasts you might like. But a lot of times those suggestions aren't that great. Sometimes they're decent, but sometimes not so great. So that's what's nice about the Self-Defense Radio Network, is you've sort of curated, podcasts where with similar topics and where people might find content that they enjoy. So you've sort of created your own suggested and recommended podcast list, essentially. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. I will guarantee you, if you go to if I could plug our website a little bit, SDRN.us. If you go there, you're not going to find any podcasts that are related to growing roses. You're not going to find any podcasts on 17th century literature. You're going to find podcasts that center around firearms and freedoms, and that's pretty much it. We do, when somebody wants to join the network, we do go, we listen to their stuff. We have a few ground rules of you've got to have this number of episodes. You have to have, you have to be talking about this as your major topic. And we curate, I guess is the right term, and make sure that they fit in with us.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got, I've got the link here in front of me. What was it again? SDRN.us. Yep, and I'll link to that in the show notes, of course, so that our listeners have easy access to that. But how many shows did you say you have now? You've got
on the front page right now, we have 11 shows. There we had at one point almost 15. We've had some shows that faded out and went away, and we're looking to add more. It's just that. I don't know how to put this without giving away too much inside information. I'm the president. I started the thing. I don't really run it anymore. The running it is all done by a 3-person board that are also podcasters on the platform. And that happened when I took a job that made me focus 100% of my efforts on doing a daily show. I just did not have time to put into the network. And so I rely on those three people to run the ins and outs of SDRN, Self-Defense Radio Network. I kind of just step back and I'm a little bit of a spokesperson.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool too, though, right? I mean, you started it. It's your baby, and you've got some other folks who have kind of taken over a little bit and run with it. So it's got to be kind of nice to see, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's an easy gig for me, simply because when the opportunity comes about, I can plug it, I can talk about it, and then they do the heavy lifting for me.
Perfect. I'm looking at the list here. You've got Riding Shotgun with Charlie, of course, with Charlie Cook. He puts out episodes on YouTube and by podcast. I know he's been doing that for quite some time, has some great guests as well. We've talked about Rob Morse and Self-Defense Gun Stories, and of course, Eye on the Target Radio, and you've got a number of other others here as well that are really great that I've listened to from time to time. So I definitely would encourage our listeners to go check out SDRN.us for Self-Defense Radio Network. Paul, before we close up, I just want to give you an opportunity to plug anything you want to plug. But one last question before you do that. Obviously, you've done hundreds, if not thousands, of episodes by now. What's one of your most memorable either moments or episodes that you've done? If you know, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. I should have given you a heads up on this question, but
that is a doozy. I mean, it's okay, Alex, which of your children do you love the most?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the question you just asked me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, let me ask you this then. I'll ask you a different question that I think is, probably easier to answer. When you started the podcast, you probably had some vision about where it would go, and I don't know, maybe it was a pretty modest vision or a grand vision. I don't know. But when did you, I don't know, either meeting Tom Gresham or meeting, you know, some bigwig, when did you feel like, oh man, I've really made it because I got to meet this person? I can feel happy about what I've done with Polite Society because I had this opportunity to meet this or that person or go to this or that place.
The very first time I felt I've absolutely made it was when I was asked to broadcast Gun Rights Policy Conference. When I was asked if I had the ability and would be interested in taking Gun Rights Policy Conference live on the internet. For those of you who don't listen to my stuff, you may not know that I have done that the last 7 years, that every time Gun Rights Policy Conference, no matter what city they're in, no matter which weekend it is, I go down there, I take my traveling roadshow, I set up all the equipment, and if you're in Poughkeepsie and Gun Rights Policy Conference is in Phoenix, you can be there. If it's in Orlando and you're in Oshkosh, you can be there. That is the single most that really let me know when Alan Gottlieb and the Second Amendment Foundation asked me to do that. That's when I thought, you know what, I've arrived and my reputation is good enough. They're asking me to do this. I must be doing something right.
Yeah. Well, that's an incredible compliment for sure to be asked by one of the largest gun organizations outside of the NRA to broadcast their premier event of the year, Gun Rights Policy Conference. That's certainly got to be a huge compliment and something you should certainly be proud of. I was there for the first time this past year in Phoenix, and I saw what an undertaking it was for you to get things set up and ready to go, and not with a lot of time to do it. By the time you sort out tech issues with the hotel and get your gear all set up, it's not an easy task.
It is the single most busy weekend I have, and really the busiest month, but that specific weekend I am 100% from Friday morning all the way, well, really Thursday night all the way until Sunday evening. And, but yet it's that event charges me up more than any other event I go to. I get the biggest battery recharge out of that event.
Yeah. Yeah. I can echo that sentiment. I certainly agree with that. That was my experience. It was amazing to meet a bunch of great people, people that I'd met only virtually and people that I'd never met at all. It's an amazing networking event for people who care about the right to keep and bear arms. Well, Paul, and I know you're a busy man and we're coming up on time for you to get going here. So in closing, first of all, I'd like to say thanks for joining the show. I always enjoy coming on your show as a guest, and finally, glad to have you on the Forge of Freedom to talk about you and then Polite Society News and all the things you've got going. Is there anything else you'd like to plug before we close up the show?
Not really. If you want to find me, it's at politesocietypodcast.com or as we mentioned earlier, sdrn.us. You can also find us through that. And I want to put one final plug in for ACLDN. Again, if you are a person that owns a firearm, you've got to be backed up in one way or another. And as Alex and I discussed earlier, I think that's the best way to do it. And by golly, get yourself some training as well. I'm speaking of Marty Hayes. I can honestly proudly say I was killed twice by Marty Hayes when we did a live fire simunitions exercise at the Firearms Academy of Seattle, active shooter interdiction training. And Marty has changed my life, not only in helping me get through the legal challenges, but also in the training that he's helped me get. Fantastic person. I owe a lot to Marty and Gila. I owe a lot to Kathy Jackson, and all of them come out of Firearms Academy Seattle.
Well, Paul, thanks again for joining the show. I'm glad you came along for the episode today. I hope that our listeners enjoyed our conversation and got to know Paul Lathrop, the man behind the Polite Society podcast and behind a lot of other things as well, as I'm sure that our listeners have gleaned by now. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, don't forget to like and subscribe to help us spread the message of freedom. And please go check out Polite Society News, Polite Society Podcast, and the Self-Defense Radio Network. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter at Forge of Freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.